Now Lone Raymond, chance to shoot. He scores! For Raymond, he scores! Lucas Raymond, overtime winner! Pickpocketed by Dowd, down towards the goal, he scores! Wrap it up for Washington!
Swinging a little soft liner out to right, Joe races in and makes the catch. And Lindor was late to tag, and he'll still end up scoring. What happened?
And McNeil flies one out to right. Joe coming on, and he makes the catch. No tag.
Oh, my God.
And it comes late as Joe lost it, and the Mets get a gift run.
Oh, my God.
What happened to Connor Joe?
He spiked it. He was in between throwing it hard to home or throwing it easy to the second baseman, Triolo, and he just spiked it.
2-2 pitch. Swinging a fly ball deep right field. But hanging up there for Marte, and he'll make the catch. The Mets claim game one, 6-3.
Oh my God. What a horrible night that was.
That was horrendous.
And talk about never going back again. Might be the Penguins to the second round of the playoffs. They might not even make it to the first round this year. This is a disaster. City Limits, and then on top of everything else, that was as frustrating a sports night in Pittsburgh as I've experienced in a long time. What are the Canadians doing, City Limits? They're up 4-1. All they needed to do was win the game in overtime. That guy staring at me, what's his name?
This is Ty.
Ty.
He worked with you, supposedly, in the past.
I know, I forgot who he was. He's grown up a lot. How old is Ty? He's 29.
He's 29 next week. Happy birthday, Ty.
He was 24 when I knew him before, and I was younger then, too. He acted like, you know, I'm supposed to remember everything about him. It was 5 years ago.
Do you think Ron would remember his name?
And then I get a call from Zeiss today at... No, Ron never knew his name.
Okay, now.
Then I get a call from Zeiss at 9:32 telling me he's sick. If you're sick, don't you know before 9:32? When you're due at 10? I hope he feels better. I do. Sometimes sicknesses come about very quickly, but normally... I know well before the show that I'm going to be sick. Don't you?
Yeah, me too. Feel better, Zeiss.
No wonder he's sick. Maybe he's sick from last night's, the events of last night. Bob Walk. I don't even remember which was on radio, which was TV. I heard half the game on the radio, watched half on TV. I think Bob was on TV and mentioned how frustrating, it was frustrating watching that game. Guys throwing balls down the middle. Defensively, they're not as good a team defensively as I thought they would be. Just ridiculous things happen too often. O'Neill Cruz routine plays, Sawinski letting a ball go, and we could have saw Bailey Falter no hitter, and then Connor Joe throwing a ball directly into the turf below him. That Mets call was great, by the way. I don't know what he was doing. It was just annoying, maddening, frustrating watching that Pirate game. And by the way, since they started 5-0, what are they, City Limits? 6-6? They got some problems. They got some problems offensively. They got some problems defensively. We're going to get into that later. But the main source of frustration, as maddening as that Pirate game was last night. And I hate the Mets, too, by the way. I just hate them. I hate their guts. Don't you, Limits? Do you hate the Mets?
Yeah, I don't necessarily hate them as much as
a
division rival.
We both hate the Mets. They used to be a rival. I used to like the Mets.
I like when the Mets come to Pittsburgh because something odd always happens, like the Josh Harrison rundown, Pirates walking off games, I think Josh Bell crushing a home run on like his debut. But yeah, playing in New York against the Mets is usually always a disaster.
Yeah, I remember them from a long time ago and hating them. I actually used to like them. My grandfather, Pop-Up Starkey, old New York cop, lived in Comac, Long Island. We used to stay with him, and then my dad would take me to Shea Stadium. I think my neck is injured because I have to turn to look at you all the time, which really doesn't matter because we're on the radio. So why do I always turn? It's either that or golf. And I played 30 holes of golf yesterday with Flying Myron Brown. You remember him? You know the name?
I don't know.
You should, City Limits. You should know your basketball history. Played in the NBA. and was a really good college and high school player here. What a great guy, too. We had a great time. Zeiss hooked me up with him for a round of golf. We just kept playing till it was dark. It was like a couple of golf addicts. Like me and Myron Brown are going to be under a bridge someday with only our with like a sign attached to our drivers saying, "Will golf, you know, please donate to our golf habit." You know what I mean?
So how'd you do?
I don't know. It was 30 holes and I lost track. So did he. I did pretty well. But we're going to play again, maybe to our detriment. It was great. Where was I? Zeiss calls up at he texts me at 9:32. Now I have to plan a solo show, which really there isn't much to it, right?
Well, 30 minutes before the show, a little bit different.
28 minutes before the show, but who's counting? Plus, we have the big bosses in here today from New York. I'm a nervous wreck about that. I didn't even know about it till 5 minutes ago.
There's a lot of chairs set up out in the conference room.
Is there food?
I haven't seen it yet. Salem's will be here.
Yeah, that's what I need is the food. Then there was the Penguins. And I predicted, all my predictions were wrong last night. I predicted the Penguins to win. That was right. And then I predicted all the other teams to lose, and they all won. And all they needed was one thing to happen. I mean, they needed more than that. But I mean, to set up tonight to be more realistic, they at least needed one of those teams to not get 2 points. 1 point would have been fine. But sure enough, the Red Wings come back from 4-1, and they tie the game late, and they win the game in overtime late, and it was just it was beyond annoying. It was infuriating. Were you watching that take place?
Yeah, I was bouncing between everything, the Pirates, the Penguins, looking at scores on my phone, because they were flashing up the scores on Sportsnet Pittsburgh, too.
I know.
And seeing the deterioration of that game for Montreal and Detroit, oh my gosh, like, you could just tell the writing was on the wall once they continued to claw and claw and claw.
I know. I thought the Canadians might pull it out in overtime, and then I thought, all right, they're heading to a shootout. But no, they don't head to a shootout. Here's the thing, though. Here's the thing, is that the Red Wings treated that game like it was, and I don't blame anybody for celebrating. It was an awesome comeback. I just wonder about the emotional letdown from it. Like, they didn't win the Stanley Cup last night. They didn't clinch a playoff spot last night. There's more work to be done, and not only do they have to win this game in Montreal tonight, back-to-back nights, they probably have to get 2 points. I mean, what am I talking about? Not all, 1 point won't do it, is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
They need two, probably. And Montreal is a very proud franchise, City Limits, which you should know. And guys were ticked off coming off the ice last night like they had just gotten embarrassed. I wouldn't be surprised if they came to play tonight. That's my wife calling me in the middle of a show again. Does she not know I do radio? Zeiss texting me at 9:32. My wife calling me at 10:12. What is going on here today coming off last night?
Maybe she thinks Zeiss is speaking and you have 30 seconds to talk to her.
That's my question. And then there was the Bruins finally decide to pull the chute in that game. Not the game against the Penguins. They had 10 shots in the middle of the third period yesterday.
Yeah, you want to talk about disinterested?
Yeah,
how about
totally.
Boston?
Yeah, they finally decide they don't have interest anymore. They'll get ready for the playoffs in the Capitals game. But here's the other thing. The Flyers are still very, very much alive here, City Limits, which is unbelievable, really. So the Flyers have everything to play for tonight. They need to win in regulation, which could result in some very strange scenarios late, like a tie game where they pull their goalie, that type of thing. They need to win in regulation, but they're highly motivated, and they've been waiting on the Capitals. So the Capitals got to go into Philly and play. I'm not still necessarily predicting this will happen, that the Penguins are going to get in, but it's not going to take the miracle on ice. It's going to take the Red Wings, who have lost all the time for 2 months or a month and a half, losing at Montreal or not getting 2 points, losing at any point, just not getting 2 points. And the Capitals not getting 2 points. And the Penguins then winning Wednesday. And the Penguins will be in still. They'll still be in. But man, that Red Wings game was just a gut punch combined with the Pirates. Just one of the most frustrating nights I can remember. You, how about you out there? 412-928-9370. As a bonus, you get to talk to City Limits. He's a rabid Pittsburgh sports fan. Who are you talking to, Limits? Who was that?
I'm talking to Ty. We're training.
Oh.
He's still here.
I thought you were on the phone talking to someone.
I was, yes. Ryan in Fort Myers wants to know, because of your conversation with Mr. Brown on the golf course, if you think that the Pittsburgh will ever get an NBA team, and he also has an invitation for you.
Take the invitation, and I'll delay the call, okay? Hopefully it's to a country club, yes?
It's an invitation in Fort Myers.
Ooh.
Yes. He's on the hold.
Wonder if he knows Ron. I can't go to him right now. I'm in the middle of a show opening rant. But I will go to him eventually if he wants to hold, okay? Here's the other thing I'm thinking about. One lousy, stinking point. That's it. 1 point is what the Penguins are missing right now. If they had accrued a single lousy, stinking point over these first 81 games, one extra point, they would be in that wild card spot right now, controlling their fate going into Wednesday's game against the Islanders. And that got me thinking this morning about the ones that got away. The ones that got away, the worst losses of the season. I got asked about this in my intergalactically read Post-Gazette mailbag, City Limits. It's read from here to Uranus.
That's right.
We know that. And I just can't get over that. One tiny little point. So I started looking at you know, the 7, 8, 9, 10 worst losses of the season. And there's lots of them. I need your full attention, City Limits. You seem to be divided this morning. Zeiss called in sick at 9:32, and now you're training somebody? What are we doing here? I need you to be with me. We're doing a show.
A lot of hands on this deck.
This is unbelievable to me. The sixth worst loss of the season was the first loss of the season. And if you have one that you want to chime in on here, 928-9370, 412-928-9370. Of the one that's most regrettable. I think we're all going to agree on number one, but I'll go with number six first. And that was the season opener against the Blackhawks. You talk about setting a tone for the season. Remember, there was a great opening night crowd. They were fired up. It was the Erik Karlsson lid lifter there. And instead, the Penguins did all the things they did last season and all the things they would do this season. Their power play stunk. They blew an early two-goal lead. They blew a third-period lead. The Blackhawks stink and wound up stinking. It was the only time, there were only two other times all year where the Blackhawks came back from two to win, and that was against San Jose and Arizona. But sure enough, the Penguins pulled it off on opening night, and then when people said to Sully after the game, man, that sure looked like last year, he sort of bristled. Well, little did he know it would look a lot like this year, too. The opening game against the crappy Blackhawks is the worst loss, number six, one that got away. Number five was a complete debacle, November 24th at KeyBank Arena. You remember when the Penguins never lost late leads under Sully? Do you remember that, Limits? Are you old enough?
It was a big calling card.
They went like 100 games without doing it. Literal multiple seasons. They lead going into the third. They never lose. Now, they always lose. They lost multiple two-goal leads. And once we get to number one up there, boy, are we going to have a treat then.
I have a feeling what that one's going to be.
This one was Sabres 3, Penguins 2. They had a 2-0 lead with less than 15 minutes in regulation against the crappy Sabres, and they never even made it to overtime. Do you think 1 point would help right now from that one? The Sabres, 2-0 with 15 minutes left in regulation, and you can't even get a point. And Erik Karlsson, his own goal, contributed to that third period collapse. And speaking of that, that brings us to number four at Mulsey Arena in Arizona. You remember this one?
This one's number four.
This is Mullet Arena because of the symbolism attached to this. This was the Malkin Letang own goal on a delayed penalty. The only good news being that the Penguins finally scored a power play goal. The bad news, into their own net.
I could have seen that one number one. It was that atrocious. That was one of the key dropping off points for people.
And then to compound matters, the Coyotes, their next game embarked on a 14-game losing streak, which nearly set the NHL record. But no, the Penguins had to score on their own net. No, it's the one down there, guys, on the power play at the other end with the goalie in the net. Number three. Now, this was a game that the Penguins themselves have pointed to as sparking their turnaround, which is all well and good and nice and fun, but they had a 4-0 lead. This was the third time in franchise history. And the franchise has been around for over half a century, lest I remind you, that they blew a 4-goal lead to lose. Not only that, they led 4-0 with less than 24 minutes left in regulation. And then they lost on the first shift of overtime when Drouin blew past Letang down the right side. Maybe all we need to know is that they look back on this one fondly. Yeah, that's where it all began. Started our streak that night. Oh, you mean the night you lost a 4-0 lead and then on the first shift of overtime? Here's number two on the list of most regrettable Penguin games of the year. This is off the top, by the way, brought to you by JP Roofing and Siding. We have the Shelty Show later on today. We're going to ask him about Chapman getting thrown out of the game and everything that happened last night. Just a bunch of interesting situations involving the Pirates. Why, thank you, City Limits, who just handed me my reads. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia, Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Fan Hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, providing trusted plumbing and HVAC service for 50 years. We also have Jay Caulfield at 12:30. Number two on most regrettable, unforgivable Penguin losses this season, March 7th. PPG Paints Arena. I'm still reeling about this one. Capital 6, Penguins nothing. That's not really the point. The point is this total no-show. And this was Letang after the game, who credit to him for telling the truth. There was nothing going on, no energy, no passion, nothing. As a group, we didn't show up. He admitted it. Tons of people excused that effort because the Penguins learned that day, we all did, that Gensel was going to be traded the next day. So it was almost like, well, what'd you expect? This beloved guy was going to get gone from the locker room. What did I expect? A professional effort in front of the ticket-buying public in a heated playoff race against an arch rival? Call me crazy, but this is pro sports, right?
I was at that game. And it felt like you were walking into somewhat of a funeral where everybody was just so upset. Jake Gensel, the players acted like they don't even want to be there.
It's professional sports. They owed you an effort that night. Guys get traded all the time. I don't care who it is. I love Jake Gensel as much as the next person. Those guys battled with him for years. I get it. It happens. That game. That night, that no-show has the Capitals and Penguins where they both are right now. Capitals in playoff position. Not like they never traded anybody the last couple years. Guys who had been around and won games with them. Cup with them. They're in playoff position. The Penguins are out, and the difference is a single bloody point. A complete no show. Plus, Gensel had already been out for multiple weeks and everybody knew he was going to get traded. So have a team gathering where you get all your feelings out off the ice, not on the ice against the Capitals, where one of your best players tells the world we had no passion and we didn't show up. I'm still just dumbfounded by that entire scenario.
It was a sulking session.
I really am. Couldn't they have had a party off the ice? You know, a pity party, I guess it would have been. And a goodbye to Jake? Seriously, that might have been the way to go. They all knew he was leaving. Jake knew he was leaving. So the night before the game, have everybody over and everybody, you know, sit down, say your goodbyes to the guy. But we all got hockey to play. You know why? We're getting paid millions of dollars. And people like Little City Limits, was that your only game of the year?
I went to two, but it was the last one I went to.
People like Little City Limits may only go to a couple games this year, and this is one of them, and you owe them a professional effort, especially when you're battling desperately for a playoff spot. 6-0 no-show against the Capitals. And then number one, the coup de grace Limits, highlighting all of the Penguins' worst traits. Lack of focus, lack of intensity, mindless puck management, inability to protect late leads, ridiculous power play, deficient bottom six, underachieving Tristan Jarry, underachieving big money guys like Rickard Rakell. All of that. And I could keep going, but I may lose all my breath and drop like Ron did one day here. Do you remember that scary day?
I don't know.
You weren't here. No, that was scary. He was fine, City Limits. Don't worry. I don't mean to tell you a scary story so early in the show. Ducks 4, Penguins 3, October 30th, the night before Halloween at PPG Paints Arena, and it was an absolute horror show. You may remember the details. You may have intentionally blocked them out for the rest of your life. It was 3-3. Please follow this. It was 3-3 with 2:08 left in regulation, and the Penguins had just gone on a two-man advantage for a minute 49. Can we all do the math together? Score, 3-3. Time left in regulation, 2:08. Penguins' two-man advantage for the next 1:49. So that left, what's 11 plus 8? 19 seconds in which they wouldn't be on a two-man advantage, and they were at least guaranteed a point if nothing happened. Well, we all know what happened. They not only failed to score, but Erik Karlsson, his pass to Malkin at the point got picked off. Mason McTavish comes out of the penalty box. So technically, the turnover was made with a two-man advantage. This dude flies out of the penalty box, skates in alone on Jarry, who plays it like he was, you know, somebody put cement glue on his back to the crossbar. He never moved an inch in the crease. McTavish even said afterward, he's like, yeah, he seemed kind of far back. I just dropped his hands with a fake and put it upstairs. Not that I'm blaming Jarry. It was Carlson's pass. It's just the whole thing. Not only are they on a two-man advantage, they give up a shorthanded goal at the end of regulation and they don't get a point.
13 seconds left.
If they had gotten that point, they would be in playoff position right now. Never mind that the Ducks were at the end of a four-game trip, would turn out to be the NHL's third-worst team, and were forced to throw in a backup goalie when John Gibson left injured after a miraculous save on Crosby. Nope, the Penguins still managed to blow a third-period lead and then blew a third-period tie with a two-man advantage. I don't know what to... Did that happen? Did that really happen?
I think we blocked it out to try to remember that it didn't.
Do you agree that that's the worst one? Well, it's one of the worst ones ever. The Ducks coach, Greg Cronin, who I didn't even know he was their coach till about an hour before the show today, said that was one for the ages. Yes, it was, Greg.
Yeah,
yes, it was.
It dropped their record to 3-6 on the season. Losers of two in a row. It just basically was one of those depressing, foreshadowing games of what could be to come for the season.
Yeah, it was again symbolic and devastating. It just like I said, all their worst traits, the mindlessness, the ridiculous power play. Just a tragic power play this season with no accountability, you know. Do they have the worst power play in the league right now? Let me look that up right now, Limits. Did you leave that game early that night?
I left with about a minute left. I'm not somebody who likes to leave games early, even if it's a blowout, but with a minute or so, maybe two, whenever that sixth goal was scored, I was like, yeah, let's get out of here. And there was a sea of booze.
Man, and then yeah, you know, we lost Jake and blah, 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 blah. I do credit Letang that night for saying, you know, basically this was completely unacceptable, a complete no-show.
And the barn was completely empty in the third period of that game.
And there
completely.
And there are the Penguins with the second worst power play in all of hockey at 14.6. When you actually look at it, limitless wonder, it really does. It jumps off the page and punches you right in the face. It really does. The worst, you know, you go down the list from the Lightning at 29% on their power play, the Canes, the Rangers, the Oilers, all these teams with high-end stars, Maple Leafs, Stars, Panthers, Canucks, they're all up there, well into the 20s. And then you start going down, down, down past the Coyotes and the Capitals and the Kraken, like you're going deep into the forest here and all the scary animals, and it's starting to become nightfall. The Senators, the Flames, the Ducks, the Sabres, the Blackhawks, the Blue Jackets, and then way down there, way deep in the forest, the Pittsburgh Penguins. At 14.6%. The only team worse is the Fighting Tortorellas at 12.3%. That is an all-time franchise embarrassment. It really is. For the amount of talent that they have, high-end, and the money that they're spending. And it's not, and that's not even the end of it. The fact that it's 14.6%. The fact that if it was just bad, if the power play was merely bad, the Penguins would have locked up a playoff spot 2 weeks ago. They've also allowed, I think, the second most power play shorthanded goals in the whole league. Last I checked, it was 11. It might be up to 12. I've lost track. And zero accountability. What is going on over there?
Well, and it seems like everything that has happened in the last couple of weeks has masked the early portion of the season and has basically made us forget how bad things were.
A very wonderful and salient point, my friend. I was just going to say that. Is that this, you know, they're trying to put, and they might succeed in the end, but they need help. They're trying to put lipstick on the pig that was their season. And they've put some on there, you know? Put a little mascara on the pig, some lipstick, some eyelash. What do people put on eyelashes? Limits?
What, eyeliner?
Eyeliner, yeah. Yes, eyeliner.
Can't say I use it.
And they've just begun with the lipstick, but they're going to need somebody else to help put it on, you know? And maybe they get in and maybe things change. As we've seen, things get pretty crazy in hockey. But it's more likely now, and the percentages favor that the Penguins aren't going to make it, and they have only themselves to blame, and more than anything, more than overtime, and believe me, I do not excuse what they've done in overtime this season, but it's still, that's kind of a crapshoot, 3-on-3. The power play killed this team.
This has become a real pattern in this town. Last year, this year, down to the last two games, down to the last game, just like the Steelers, you need help to be able to get in. You don't control your destiny. And a big reason why is because bad losses against bad teams in the middle of the season in a lot of areas that should succeed that don't.
Very well said. I agree with every syllable and half syllable you just uttered. 412-928-9370. 928-9370. You're holding out hope that the Penguins can still get in. And for you, what was the one that got away? The one that got away, because it's one lousy point that's keeping them out of the playoffs right now. All right. Text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, personal injury law firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Plus, you can call now to win two tickets to see the Pirates play the Angels on Wednesday, May 8th at 12:35 p.m. with Mr. Paul Zeiss. Now, the game's at 12:35, so if Zeiss does call in sick, it would be at about 11:59, wouldn't it?
You be getting down to the game. Where's Zeiss?
No, Zeiss is a trooper. He will be there, I'm assuming. And you can win two tickets. Caller number three goes to the game with Zeiss. 412-928-9370 as a bonus. You get to say hello to our dear friend City Limits. The Shelty Show coming up at noon. Up next, let's get into the Pirates, the other piece of last night's massively frustrating couple of hours watching our local clubs in action. The Penguins actually played a pretty good game, but that really wasn't the story, was it? 412-928-9370. All right, we got play-in tonight. The NHL should absolutely have a play-in, by the way. Hold on a second here, Limits. If they did have a play-in in the East, it works where seven plays eight. The winner's in. The loser of that game plays the winner of a 9-10 game. It's brilliant what the NBA has done. And do you know what it would be right now? Well, thank you for asking. It would be the Islanders 7-8 against the Capitals. And by the way, the Islanders don't deserve crap. You know, people say, oh, you played a whole season. Why would you penalize somebody by putting them in a play-in? What have they earned? What have the Islanders earned? They're minus 18 on the season. They had a nice little season-ending streak. So have the Penguins. And we just talked about how that really, in many ways, doesn't undo what the Penguins did to themselves. The Islanders lost 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 games in a row and 8 out of 9. To end March. And then they played Philly and Chicago and Columbus and Montreal and Jersey. Why should anybody protect them? They should have to play a play-in game against Ovechkin, and it would be unbelievable. And the winner of that gets in the playoffs. The loser of that, let's say it's the Capitals, would play the winner of the 9-10 game. And let's say, just for blanks and giggles, that the Flyers got the ninth seed and the Penguins had the, let's say Penguins 9 and Flyers 10. Can you imagine Penguins Flyers in a winner take all with the winner of that game to play the Capitals in a winner take all? What is the NHL waiting for?
Well, they blew up the chicken man in Philly last night. Now they blew up his house too.
Here I thought Nelly had the soundtrack of the year. This one's rivaling it, Limits.
I thought Thursday's was pretty good too, you said.
It was okay. This one's better. Very proud of you. I can't hear myself. There we go.
Can never go wrong with Bruce Springsteen.
No.
The boss.
Never. Especially when he's acoustic. And I told you, you always go unplugged.
Like acoustic, huh?
Yeah, and this, in my not-so-humble opinion, is his best album, Nebraska. Not a lot of people would share that opinion, but what do I care? Not a lot is how much I would care.
Apparently not.
Derek Shelton coming up, top of the hour. Lots to talk about with him. In terms of injuries, what do they do with Henry Davis when Grandal comes back? I think that's the primary question that I have for him. But I wanted to depart from the Pirates for a moment and talk about this Pitt story from yesterday that seems to have people up in arms. Did you see this one, Austin, where Deion Hayes, he didn't put up great, like, conventional numbers last year, but I think he was among the leaders, if not the leader, in pressure rate among defensive players in the ACC last year. So he's a fifth-year defensive end, went into the transfer portal Monday. Chris Carter with the story at postgazette.com. This was the reason for his departure. And this is a quote from Hayes to Carter. It's just that I don't believe we can win now. I believe we, and then in parentheses, we're going to win games, but I believe we're in a developmental stage, and I just can't do that right now. I'll be honest with you. I don't have a problem with that quote. This is pro sports. Pitt stunk last season. He wants out. He wants to go to a winner. If that's the reason, if it's a money, simply a money reason, then I think I would have a problem with it, because what I'm lauding him for is just flat-out honesty, if this is actually the reason.
Well, and how about he tried to walk back his comments, too? He tweeted out screenshots of his conversation with Chris and then eventually deleted the tweet with the full entire conversation. He did not think that it would be published.
Wait a second.
Oh, yeah.
So is he claiming that he was quoted that this was not on the record?
Apparently so. I have a screenshot of a couple of things he said, because Carter was asking, and he said, I believe we're going to win games, but I believe we are at a developmental stage. Just can't do that now.
Yeah.
We have a young team. I don't believe we can win now. And then he said, I didn't know you were going to post that. I thought we had a relationship and you would ask me first. Wish you the best. Just know for next time, ask before you just release, because I thought we were cool.
Hmm. Well, that gets more interesting, doesn't it?
And then he deleted the tweet.
Well, why did he delete the tweet?
He deleted his own screenshots. He kept the receipts and then he deleted it.
Well, in my experience, you know, unless somebody says off the record, I don't know, obviously, the nature of this conversation. But normally when a reporter calls you, it's on the record until you say it's off, right?
Right. These were direct messages.
Direct messages. Okay. Either way, as I'm thinking about this real time here, the kid's just being honest.
Right.
I wanted to go to a better team. What's wrong with that? You tell me what's wrong with that.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Because we've gotten to a point where, and these releases are made by college football players, college basketball players. Oh, thank you, Pitt. Thank you, Penn State. Thank you, West Virginia, for all that you've done for me. I really appreciate it.
Exactly, City Limits. Now you're on to something.
This is just what I feel is best for me. Thank you, everyone. I appreciate it. All the cafeteria workers, everybody working in this dance. It's just basically a big PR statement. And now somebody's finally honest and says what their real reasoning is for leaving. And there's a lot more hoopla, and he's getting crushed about it.
Now, if it turned out that he was simply going for a pay raise and couching it as, oh, yeah, I don't think we can win now, but I'm really going for the money, then I would have a problem with it, because then he's not being honest.
Right.
Right? But it says here in the story that he was one of the highest paying NIL deals on the team for last season. That doesn't mean someone else obviously couldn't outbid them. So I think there's some unanswered question here. Questions, I should say, plural. But in the meantime, I'll take that at face value for now, and I have zero problem with it. I don't think this team is winning right now. I think they're in a developmental stage. I want to go where I can win. And a source told Carter that it was mostly about Pitt's offense. He doesn't believe that Hayes doesn't believe that this offense is going to take a step forward next season. Listen, man, it's pro sports here, in case you haven't noticed. It's a free-for-all all the time. And the people who started this were the coaches, right? They were the ones who started it, the adults in the room, who told parents, I'm going to be here for all your son's 4 years and preach accountability and devotion and loyalty to team. And then before you go out and bust your ass in a bowl game, they take off and don't say goodbye to their players that they recruited, and they go for the money. They're the ones who set the example. And I would also say, by the way, that NIL in its current state began a long, long time ago. And all the cheating that has happened in pro sports began a long, long time ago from some unlikely places. And I always point to John Wooden's UCLA dynasty as a place that not a lot of people talk about, where some of the origins of cheating in big-time sports happen. You can go back and read a book on that. I think it was called The Wizard of Westwood, where it said, you know, guys were paid after games, little handshakes that had money in them, things like that. And then there was Sam Gilbert, who was the sugar daddy, and Wooden claimed he didn't know, or he turned a blind eye or something. But those programs cheated, period. There was a story in the LA Times, February 1st, 1982. And I went back and spoke to the writers of this story a long time ago. One was Mike Litwin, who became a columnist later for the Denver Post, worked for the LA Times. They did 45 interviews with people, and this was, of course, either at the end, toward the end of Wooden's tenure or after it, early 80s there. 45 people connected to those UCLA dynasty teams, including players and coaches. And it portrayed a wealthy booster named Sam Gilbert as a, quote, one-man clearinghouse for players. Members of 7 of 10 of Wooden's championship teams were lavished with, quote, cars, stereos, clothes, airline tickets, and scalper's prices for season tickets, all against NCAA rules, period. So wouldn't it make sense if cheating, or you want to look at it as payments in college sports, paying players, starts out with money-lined handshakes and cars and stereos that over the course of decades, it's going to become more and more and more into what we see today, and now it's legalized mostly? Makes sense to me. Just don't forget where it started. Just don't forget where it started with the most saintly of programs. Okay? That program, whether Wooden knew everything about the cheating or not, you know, you're supposed to promote, what's the saying they always killed these guys on, like Tarkanian? An atmosphere of compliance, yes. There was no atmosphere of compliance for those old UCLA teams. That program cheated its ass off. Okay? So know that. And then know that the guardians of the game, the coaches, again, the guys who line up before these players and preach to them about how you got to look out for your brothers on this team. And you got to be loyal, and you got to do what's necessary, and you got to pay the sacrifice. These are the same adults that walked out on these kids to greener pastures at the worst times, oftentimes not even talking to them. I remember Ben Howland walking out on Pitt, walking around the Pitt offices with a California real estate brochure in his hands, just openly being courted. And then I remember walking over to that campus after he left, when he had just been in a meeting with his players, like a day before that, and I talked to the primary people, people like Carl Krauser, who said he was talking about next season. I were coming back and doing this, this, and this. He knew he was leaving. Okay? All of that adds up and rolls up to where we are today. And now that the players want to get their share and want to go wherever they want and want to get as much money as they can, and want to go to a winner on their terms, they're the ones who get clubbed over the head for it. Okay, so until I learn more or something differently about Deion Hayes, he's talking like a professional athlete, which is exactly what he is. And like my friend City Limits just said, you see all these guys, oh, thank you for everything you've done for me. No, you're leaving. That's fine. And tell us why, you know? And he did. Wants to go to a winner. Now, if it was more about the money, again, then I'll backtrack on how I feel right now and say, hey, man, if it's about the money, just say you're getting paid somewhere, if you're allowed to say that.
And, I mean, that's kind of what Doran was alluding to earlier today on the morning show. Just about money.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Well, yeah. But I'd have to see sort of the evidence of that, which will come out later with how much this kid gets paid at his new school.
And especially because he was...
Is it already something that's lined up? I don't know.
He was getting a lot from Pitt already.
Yeah, that's the thing.
It's not like there's too many stars on this team. Deion Hayes was one of them.